Great. Hi again, everyone. I'm Zan. I'm a compulsive overeater. And I don't owe amends today yet. I've been thinking about that. No, and I want to thank Alex for asking me to speak. And I love getting, you know, like a standing ovation when walking in the room. That right there is the nature of my disease. And I just came back from New York City, and, you know, there was a musical there, David Byrne, Outside Issue. But it was configured in a way that you could be part of the actual dance. It was in a disco. And I thought, now, if I bought tickets to that and I got those on the floor there, I can say I've danced in a Broadway musical. We didn't. But yeah, and so today what keeps me from killing myself is I'm just another bozo on the bus, you know. And I have actually a little note on my sink right now that says, just be ordinary, you know. Because that's just it. That's how I roll. You know, I came in here, you know, wanting to be a professional ballerina and planning on it and all that stuff. And it's just, that's okay too. Dreams are great. But my ego is the core of my disease, and the Big Book tells me that. And the problem with that is that if everything went my way, that would be fine. But of course, it never does. And the other thing is that there's never enough for me, right? If I were, you know, David Byrne's star, then I would need to be the Queen of England's star. So, you know, it'd always be something more, more, more. And so I get to live this program instead and continue to need to make amends. I was just reading today in step 10 in the Big Book where it talks about just that simple line to set right things that, you know, mistakes we make as we go along. So anyway, we ask that you keep the focus on recovery in this 12-step program, plus Broadway musicals. All right, and I didn't ask for a time. Can I have, like, a signal when 5 minutes is up?
That's what we do, 5 minutes.
Perfect, thank you. Yeah, so garden variety compulsive overeater. And if you're new, welcome. And what I mean by that is that I was just always on a diet and always binging, right? And I almost think dieting started first. You know, gained a little bit of weight and then just went to town. And garden variety, you know, binging, 8 candy bars, pint of ice cream, half a pizza sort of thing. And I would do that for 4 days in a row and then get control and go on a diet and would be able to stay on it, usually no more than about 4 days. I often tell this one story because it comes to mind. So in this ballet pursuit, I was dancing here in West Hollywood, and my teacher said, if you lose 20 pounds, I'll get you into a company in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And at the time, I was in OA, believe it or not. And so I did complete self-will, and I went on this thing called pre-digested liquid protein, which is a fast. I mean, many, many years ago now. What was it? 70s, I guess, but or early 80s. And you didn't eat, but you drank this vile liquid. Cherry and orange flavor didn't help. And I lost some weight, but of course I did a side trip to New York on the way to Pittsburgh and just ate my way through the city. And I got there and I did my audition, you know, and the executive director took me into her office afterward and she said, I'm sorry, but we're not running a spa for fat dancers. You know, yeah, and I mean, right, that probably wouldn't happen like that today. But guess what I did after she said that? Now, here I was on the pinnacle of realizing a lifelong dream that I had. You guys know how hard ballerinas work, right? And here I was there, and I couldn't stop eating, you know. I mean, so I'm an addict, you know, and like they say, well, why do you overeat? And this program is such a wonderful, we used to say a lot, it's a program of paradox. Because in one way, in one very big way, we do self-analysis here, in my opinion. Steps 4 through 5, 6, 7, right? Very much looking at all of that stuff. What my mom did to me, what I did to her, all of that self-analysis. But I also love the simplicity of there's 3 reasons why I eat. I'm an addict, I'm an addict, and I'm an addict. You know, and so there are times where that I just, that's really kept me alive. By the way, after she said that to me, I went out into a Pittsburgh blizzard and binged my guts out. And of course, I remember the food I ate, right? Or like that. What did you, you know, when did you graduate college? I don't know. What did you eat on December 29th, 14th? I know exactly. And, I was in OA. So if you're struggling with the food, you know, bring it on. Just keep coming back. It took me 5 years to get abstinence. I'm maintaining about a 45-pound weight loss. And through the grace of a God that I understand on Tuesdays and don't understand on Friday, I'm abstaining for over 42 years now. So, again, if you're struggling, keep coming. And for me, what worked was I kept being honest. I didn't say it was okay, because it wasn't okay for me. I mean, 8 candy bars didn't feel any good, you know. It wasn't an inconvenience. It was awful. And it was suicide notes, you know, all of the emotions that go with that. There was something I wanted to say about analyzing ourselves and keeping it simple. And that is that. So when I finally got here, this is a long time ago now, and, you know, the OA birthday is coming up, and as you guys all know, we're going to get so disgusted of this. And I'm on the committee, but there's so much, but there's so many announcements. But I bring it up because, so my committee is history and hospitality. And in the hospitality room, which is like a rest place, come on along, is also a bunch of placards, posters and such of the history of OA. And of course, me wanting the standing ovation and being ego-centered, I want to do something different, right? I'm going to do it differently from it's ever been done before. And what I want to do this year is bring more AA history into it. And very much so, because that was my path too. For one thing, we wouldn't be here, of course, without, you know. Yes, Roseanne met someone in Gamblers Anonymous, and that's how she founded OA. But in the early days, we even had, and I'm talking, so I came in 1976, before women had the right to vote. Kidding. And, I mean, it's going to get scary here. You know, I have a friend, Linda, who lives in Houston with 50 years of abstinence, you guys. You know, I mean, when I came in, to have 4 years was astounding. So it's pretty fun, you know, to be getting old here and to be happy, joyous, and pretty, you know. And that's how I feel. And, you know, for better or worse. Back in the day, we even would have AA members speak at OA meetings because we wanted what they had, and we didn't have that kind of time and everything. And also, I got really lucky. My first sponsor was in both programs. So she said I had to go to at least one AA meeting a week. And it's there to come back to that simplicity that I would hear over and over. Just don't take that first bite. Just don't take that first drink. You know, like your ass can fall off, pick it up, bring it to a meeting. But just don't take that first bite. Now, I couldn't do that for 5 years. Couldn't do it. But I loved that. And, you know, raise your hand if you overanalyze everything, like me. Yeah, there'd be 1,000 reasons to Monday why I can have that one piece of fill in the blank. And that's how it usually started with me. Even just like one little red apple, that rationalization. And, you know, today, so, okay, don't hate me, but I weigh and measure my food, and it's such peace. Now, I didn't just say I starve myself, because I think some people sometimes go there. I eat a lot. Like most people go, so is that your dinner? I go, no, that's one third of my dinner. That's my salad, you know. So I eat a lot. I eat good food, all that stuff. But it's peace for me. I forgot why I brought that up. But again, back to that simplicity of just don't eat no matter what. So, man, 40 years. What happened, it was a Friday night, and I had a minor binge, actually. But I got very afraid that I was going to gain all my weight back. I had lost some. And it was that, you know, it was this maintainers meeting. Talk about history. I think I'm on the history kick today. But we had a meeting, the one where I got absent, Saturday morning, 10:30 a.m. Used to go, Peter, right? Maintainers meeting. And speakers would stand at a podium, and there was a sign on the podium. And this was just straight ahead OA. In order to share for 3 minutes, you had to be within 10 pounds of your goal weight and have 30 days of abstinence. And I personally experienced it as bringing out the best in people. I also experienced it, not that part of it, I just experienced OA as one defeat after the next, because I kept eating. And I would get 4 days of abstinence and then do that binging I described. And at that meeting, they also did one of those things where they said, raise your hand if you're in your first 30 days of abstinence. And it's like, I just, the self-hatred. And again, that's that other side of wanting to be the star, is the self-hatred that goes along with that. But in this way, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. That's the best thing that ever happened to me. It's the only reason I can explain that I'm abstinent today, that I just had to go down, down, down. So anyway, I had this fear, and I did something different on that Saturday morning, 42 odd years ago, very odd. I asked someone to sponsor me who I was intimidated of, you know, and I had been getting people that made me feel comfortable, wouldn't make, you know, would allow me in one instance very much to eat whatever I wanted. I tried it. It just didn't work. And there was a philosophy at the time, and I think it's still out there somewhere, that our problem as overeaters is that we deprive ourselves. So just let yourself eat whatever you want to eat, and you'll be. And I tried, and it didn't work for me. I'd go back to that binging. So I got this a new sponsor, and I think fear and vanity catapulted me into willingness. So I just started to work a program, and you know, and then I do kind of have a hard time talking about 40 years, right? But some of the things, what's important, especially in the early days, my goal was to be average. And it's that being ordinary. I had a sponsor who actually died recently. I'm just going to name her name because she was so wonderful, Adele. And she used to try to help me to be ordinary every day. And she told me about this guy who had a business card with his name and his phone number he would give to newcomers and other people. It just said, be ordinary. So that was some of the early days, going to those AA meetings, running with the crowd. I went to 7 to 9 meetings in the beginning for well over a year. And then I guess I'll talk about current day. So yes, as you can tell, I'm happy, joyous, and free. You know, life goes on. The reason why I kid about amends, because even like doing work like this, like service work, yeah, you bet I got my ego involved. We're going to do it this way, you know. And I'm able to just make amends if I've crossed the line. And I'm getting along with people today. I'm so grateful. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So in 2016, I hit the skids. I'd had some great professional success, still abstinent, thank God. But I went down. I literally went to bed for 4 years. First 2 years actually were in my living room, bedroom, on my bed. Second 2 years were in the living room because I got tired of it. But yeah, I was horizontal. I didn't work. I didn't go to meetings. I didn't swear off. I just got really depressed. And the reason I share it is because it's my story. I watched Downton Abbey. Downton Abbey was actually my savior. And then I joined these Downton Abbey Facebook groups. And I mentioned that because, you know, we would chat all day long on these groups. And what it did was we would analyze plot and character, and it kept me up here instead of looking at what I was doing to myself. You know, that I hated what I was doing. I hated it. And I didn't want to face, you know, I mean, I literally went to dinner with my stepmom at her house once a month, maybe walked with someone for 30 minutes toward the end once a week, went to Trader Joe's for groceries, and that was it. And so what happened at the end of, I also like to share it because I hope it helps people. And I didn't pick up the food, thank God, not even really sure how. And I think what caused it, I mean, it could analyze from here to Thursday, but I did experience loss and grief. My brother killed himself in 96. Then I lost my dad. I mean, he was 92. We're all older adults. You know, it's a natural part of life, but it got to me. Then I lost my mom, and I felt like the last Dubin standing. Don't have kids, don't have relatives, things like that. I have this program, of course, but I think it got to me. Then I got a touch of breast cancer, extremely grateful. It was very early stage, but there was that. It wasn't nothing, right? And then, you know, through a series of other things, I just really couldn't work. I couldn't concentrate, all this stuff. So I lost my career, basically. So I went down. So at the end of this, what happens? After 4 years, I didn't think anything would change. And I was, it got so bad, it was so bad that, thank you, 5 minutes, right? Awesome. I gave up coffee. That's the measure of it, the best description. You know why? This is going to sound hysterical, but it's true. Because it meant one more trip off the couch from the living room to the kitchen. I mean, I was paralyzed. I was fearful. I was just paralyzed. So at the end of that, it's like OA muscle memory. Something came into my head that said, what would someone in OA do? You know? And I just knew, but I mean, knowing on like this cellular level that I was powerless to change anything. So I just said this prayer that just came into my head. I said, God, I don't want to change, and I didn't want to. God, I know I can't change, and I knew I couldn't. And then I said defiantly, I am not going to change. I'm not going to get up. So then I think I said, if anything's going to change here, it has to be some power greater than myself. And 2 weeks later, I was up. And I think what that was about was surrender. Surrender has just always been key. But that surrender, and you know, in 1 year into OA, I was binging, and I told my sponsor I was going to quit OA because I knew I couldn't get it. I had tried it. And when I told her that, similar surrender, I got abstinent. And I did stay abstinent for a year. So I definitely put those two things together. And it's funny, isn't it? Speaking of all those AA speakers, one of them used to say, when we get here, we throw in the towel, right? It's complete surrender. We give God everything. And then we go and grab that towel back. Why that? And then one by one, a thread, like, all right, I'll surrender that job problem. All right, I'll surrender that marriage I want. All right, you know, and that is how it is. I find, I love the deep, deep surrenders, you know, and but they don't always come like that, but I'm grateful for them. And as long as I'm seeking to stay in a position of turning my will and my life over, and that's what I try to do, and that's what I just kind of have to do. I'll just end up by saying that abstinence is the most important thing in my life without exception. That was another thing we heard over and over and over, and that keeps me alive today. And I'm grateful for everyone who's ever sponsored me or taken a call. Thanks for listening. Time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leaders are my own and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you need not identify yourself. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast. And I'm going to restate the questions. Questions end at 9:15.
Thank you, Nancy. So do you have times where you just, like, don't want to do the work of the program? You don't want to go deeper and analyze what's my part? And if so, what do you do?
Let's see. I feel self-righteous about it. yes, I'm repeating the question. Do I ever just sort of get sick and tired of doing the do here? Yeah. Not really. In fact, well, I guess not really. Sometimes I think we overdo it here with all the writing and stuff. That's what I'm thinking of. Like, too much already. And I think part of it is that I have such dear, close friends that I'm in touch with all the time that the work never feels like the work. Like, you know, it just feels like... And if something comes up, it can be a quick 10 step even on a text. So it doesn't feel laborious to me. But there are times where I need to be told, you know, Zanny, you need to write about this. Thanks. Kath.
Hi, Dan. Thank you so much. Tell me a little bit how you balance, you mentioned your ego. How do you manage and balance ego and your higher power? And how did you get to a place where you were able and willing on a regular basis to give up your will of your life to higher power?
Doing the do. Going to meetings because I'll forget. Like, you know, my friend Miriam, I see her at meetings and talk to her enough, and she's always doing it right. You know, when she gets into it with her ego, she'll talk about how she thinks of helping someone. And again, it just becomes this groove. And how I get to a place, on the other hand, of surrendering is just often prolonged struggle. Recently, for instance, something happened at work. It's been about a month. I'm still grappling with it. So just doing the do the whole while, and I might get to a place where I finally just say I'm just tired of battling this in my head. But in the meantime, it requires writing and talking and being in touch. Until I'm defeated by it. Hope that answers it. Yes?
Hi, thanks for your share. You mentioned at the very beginning about perfectionism, which I think is a common problem that a lot of us have. How has your conception of perfectionism changed from when you entered the program to where you are now?
Thank you. I forgot to repeat the question. How has my perception of perfectionism changed from the beginning till now? I would say in the beginning, I thought it was the truth, right? Like every voice, every negative voice, I thought was the truth. And I can still go there. That's why I still need this program. I mean, there I was last week in New York City, right? Great time, went to the theater, did the Times Square, and my head's going, you're not enough, you're not enough. Comparing myself to my traveling partner, you know, and that's again where I had to just get back to what would Miriam do, you know? How can I make this trip the best for my traveling partner, you know? How can I help my niece who's about to embark on this great new job? But here's how it's changed. I'm so grateful. The thoughts can still come, but then I go, wait a minute, is that true? And they can still cling to me, but I at least have an inkling, you know that's not true. You know, and so knowing that, then I am free to take action in the right direction instead of being completely taken down by them. And that, again, requires going to meetings. So I saw him, Kathy.
Thank you, Stan. And I was admiring your important shoes. So my question is, my father went to bed when he was probably 6. And that was it.
Right.
And when that happened, I find myself like, I can't wait to get home and nothing. What would you say to somebody like me who has that back?
Kathy asked what I would say to someone like her who loves to go home at the end of the day and just sort of black things out, and is she going to turn into her father? Mm-hmm. That's how I heard it. You're not your father. I think I love to go home at night too and just zone out. And I think that's part of the reason that I share that I got up, because it wasn't the end. And I will say too that I did stay in touch with OA friends. I didn't go to meetings, but I didn't ever sever that completely. I would say I'm that, and higher power. I stay close, I would say. Thanks, Peter.
Yeah, thank you, Zan. You mentioned your sponsor passed away. When you get a lot of time in a pool of people that are sort of ahead of you that you can rely on, the sponsorship shrinks. How do you deal with that now with 42 years? Do you just go to your peers, or do you still need that sponsor figure in your life?
Thanks, Peter. Peter asked, with time in the program, the pool of sponsors sort of shrinks, and how do you deal with that? Yes, exactly. I go to my peers. I have a sponsor. I call her. We have a designated time, and I'm grateful, and I love her, and she helps a lot. But I call others as well. And that was something right away that my first sponsor didn't give me all I needed, and I had a conception that she would give me all my answers and all my sustenance and all of that. And she actually told me right away, like, keep it short. Like, I don't have that much time. She was funny that way. And for one thing, it made me realize that I better have a higher power. Besides other people. Look, I'm not a big higher power poster child. And by that I mean, you know, I'm not the speaker you book to talk about higher power at the birthday. God damn it. But I mean, probably it's just terms. Because, see, I believe that my friends, they are my higher power. It's higher power with skin on. Anyway, yes, I spread the wealth. Thank God. And I might go to the... Because, for instance, my higher power, my official sponsor is not in the working world anymore. And there are times where I very much feel I need to, you know, talk to someone who's working today, not even 5 years ago, you know. So, yeah, thank you. Yes.
To piggyback on that question, I'm just wondering about how you sponsor, and if you sponsor the same with everybody.
Great question. Sponsoring's really hard for me. What's your name? Ainsley asked how I sponsor, and do I sponsor everyone the same? I'm actually hoping to up my sponsorship game, because I was sponsored in kind of a loose way. We didn't use a workbook. We went through the AA 12 and 12. But I'm feeling the need lately for something more concrete. So for one thing, I get forgetful. What step are we on? You know, so I'm kind of like, but yeah. So, and do I sponsor everyone the same way? No. Just showing up for it is what's so important to me. And remembering that I don't have the answers. I can just share my experience and just oftentimes listening and being there consistently for someone, because that was so important to me. So thank you. Yeah.
Hi, thank you so much. So you talk about when you were finding your first sponsor, you tried, you know, a food plan where it allowed you to eat everything, and you said that didn't work for you. And then I think you said that it was a combination of fear and vanity that led you to a new sponsor that put you on a food plan that works. And now, fast forward, you found weight loss and physical recovery, and you weigh and measure over your food. Can you talk, I guess, more specifically about what that food plan looks like that works for you and how you're able to manage, I guess, the vanity, but keep the sanity?
Okay, thank you. So talk about my food plan and how I got there and managing vanity with sanity. Okay, I'm going to start at the end there. I'm not happy overweight. You know, when I walked in the doors, people loved me at my top weight. So I'm all about that. No matter what weight we are, no matter whether you're binging, I ate in the bathroom during a meeting. So we are all welcome here, right? I don't care. Even if you're at your top weight for 20 years here, come in. I love you. But for me, it's like when I was didn't have a college degree, no amount of self-talk could make me feel okay about that. For whatever reason. Not talking for you, for talking. It was only until I got my degree that nagging little voice of less than went away. So it's only by maintaining, and I use the word goal weight because it's not judgmental, but it's clear. So that's how I managed that part of it. For the food plan, so my first sponsor in this abstinence, it's a long time ago, she said, 3 meals a day, nothing in between. You're not allowed to weigh and measure. No sugar, flour, or starch. And the not allowed to weigh and measure is what I had a rough time with it in the first year. Because that meant that I could finish dinner and go eat a whole other salad or half a chicken, and I would. And then my head, you know, first of all, I'd feel physically bloated. I'd feel guilty, and I was constantly in this vague state of, did I have enough? Did I not have enough? And so I saw this gal flying around OA who weighed and measured everything, and she was glowing. And she would talk about having a specifics. And again, doesn't mean starvation. It just means specifics. Made her freed from the bondage of food. I asked her to food sponsor me, and that's the way I've been doing it since then. And I'm going to put in a word for something that we talk about a lot here, it's not outside issue. It's called the Sober Eating People. And it's a group of folks in OA who do something like this. I don't want any misconceptions. They're not doing gray sheet. But I will say in my personal experience, they are specific about their food. And it's my home group, in fact, where they hang out. It's an in-person meeting every Sunday morning at 7:30, and they always do a workshop at the birthday. And I love it, and I often refer people to that. I don't necessarily sponsor that way, but if people are struggling, I love how they get specific there. And the other thing is like, so that's sort of like the what, like what do I eat? Then there's the how the F do I stay on that? And, you know, I mean, gosh, all of us know what to eat, right? And the how is, and this is where I bring up that thing of I'm not a big higher power person, man. I just get with my people. I just go to my meetings. You know, I need that contact. That's how. So, Rich?
Yeah. Talk about service. How you still use service in your recovery. Okay, I'll just say I heard a long time ago a compliment about you behind your back by Dr. C, who said that he remembers how you used to sweep the floor by your way. So, I mean, I know you're like a monarch of service.
Queen Elizabeth herself has knighted me. Thank you, Richard. Richard asks how I use service. Yes, 5 more minutes. Thank you. Yeah, in the beginning, I swept the floors at this at that maintainers meeting, and I figured if I can't get abstinent sweeping the floor, there's no hope for me. So people would joke about that. Yeah, I mean, self-centeredness, as the book tells us, is the root of my disease. And so getting into service, I'm attacking the root, you know. And also makes me feel connected. Like, for one thing, I do think part of that depression I had was also a problem of isolation. Like, I work at home and I live alone. And that was a problem. So, service, and it's all about that, doing the do. It keeps me in with my people, keeps my character defects in my face, you know. yeah, so I just try to take opportunities, and it makes me feel good. Thanks. Yeah.
Do you have a routine for everything?
I do. I wake up and I do 5 minutes of mediocre meditation. As long as I'm sitting there. And like this morning, my cats interrupted me. I've been away for a week, so of course I broke my meditation to pet the kitties. I try to read something, some of our literature. And then beyond that, though, besides calling my sponsor, taking my sponsee calls, I have my home group, and I love calling it my home group. I think that's so important. And then my other service jobs and things. But that's about it. Otherwise, as other people have asked, I write when needed. I do a 10-step when needed. But it's not real regimented other than that. And I think we are good time.
Close.
Very close. Good enough. It's now time.